Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Well, unfortunately, we've had some serious technical difficulties tonight, but as you can tell, we have in fact been able to get back on. We were blocked from our internet access for over half an hour, so we certainly apologize. We're just getting on now, but there was absolutely nothing that we could do. The internet service that we were utilizing at that particular time somehow became just unavailable. And you all know that oftentimes when you're doing certain types of work, that's what happens. So certainly you understand, and we appreciate you all hanging in there. Our boards are lit up, and we are very thankful that, again, that you all stayed on, because you know what tends to happen. Okay, we're going to go right into our program. Certainly we give thanks and praises to our Creator. Well, we're going to continue with part two of course, our dialogue with Dr. John Johnson. We're going to go right into our segment to talk more about the rape and the murder. Of course, Private First Class Lavina Johnson. Again, we apologize for not being able to get you our initial segment that we had wanted to start off with Sister Roz, because we wanted to talk about, of course, the a petition that we have for Brother Malcolm. We're going to have to reschedule that because we are certainly like 45 minutes behind schedule, really more than that. So what we're going to do, Sister Roz, if you're on, we apologize. We're just getting on for tonight. We had technical difficulties for almost an hour. So we'll get Sister Roz on for our next segment. We may do a special edition tomorrow just to kind of catch up. But at any rate, we are also going to bring you an update from Sister Munira. That'll be also coming up. But again, we're going to get ready to go to Dr. John Johnson. Let's see. Maybe we can hold off just for a few minutes. I think we might have Sister Roz here. Let me just check real quick. I can't really tell because, again, we're really having some problems tonight. Apparently, our show was extremely powerful tonight because we had some serious complications. But let's do this. We're going to check. Maybe we can get a brief report from Sister Roz now because I think she is on. And Dr. Johnson, you just hang on because we got you. I see you in queue. We just want to check on something. Let's see. We're going to go to, I think, Sister Roz, you're at, I believe, at this line. We're going to try to patch you in now because we do want to at least get the brief report because we know that the petition is really important and you're trying to get signatures now. Sister Roz, do we have you on this line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
I hear you.
Oh, greetings, sister. Thank you for hanging in there. We've had problems. I don't know if you were on all the time, but for the past hour, we could not get internet access.
Oh,
it was blocking every time we tried to get on. You know, so it's like really kind of interesting, but we give thanks. So what we're going to do, I know we want to talk with you briefly about the petition that you have online in regard to the investigation for Brother Malcolm. Give us that briefly now, and then we'll go a little more in depth at another time. But we do want to give people that information so they can at least go on and sign on. But tell them why it's so important that they do communicate or do participate, rather, in this petition drive.
Absolutely. First, I would like to say thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate being on your
absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Secondly, the petition is www.change.org/petitions, and the heading is Secretary of State John Kerry Assassination for Malcolm Hodge Shabazz. And the reason why the petition is very important is because a petition is a great way of creating awareness, public awareness.
Right.
I'll give you an example for I'll give you an example. You remember the Trayvon Martin case, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Trayvon, when he was killed, it took like 3 months before the media even picked up on his story and started to broadcast. And the reason was because African Americans, it was something about that story that touched us as a people, possibly because he was a child. It could have been any one of our children. And it's so common. But for some reason, there was a spread on the internet that just went crazy like wildfire. And it was our people that brought that story to light. Had it not gone viral on the internet by reposting and creating petitions, it would have never created the awareness that was needed to get this case to the next level. Politicians, only thing that they really are concerned with is stats, you know, quotas, and surveys. So petitions are a great way of creating public awareness for what's going on and letting our politician know that, yes, there is a certain amount of people that are interested in this case. And this is definitely a case that no one should turn their back on.
Absolutely.
Also, you know, with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, using both of them as great examples, during their days, they had a new invention called the television, and they used the television to promote their movement. Well, today we have our Babylon, and that's the internet. And the reason why is because we can use the internet and just by a click of a button, we can communicate with several billion people in seconds.
That's right.
So
that's
we need
right.
to use the resources that we have today.
Absolutely. All right, my sister. Well, we give thanks. And again, on our next program, we'll go more into the petition and talk a little more about Brother Malcolm and why, you know, justice has to be put forward in this situation. We owe it to him.
Absolutely.
We owe it to the family. And we owe it to our people because we have to do everything that we're supposed to do or that makes us negligent. So give out that website address again.
That is www.change.org/petition. And the heading of the petition is Secretary of State John Kerry, assassination for Malcolm Hodge Shabazz, sorry.
All right. Good thanks. Well, Sister Raj, thank you so much for, you know,
You're
hanging
welcome.
On for us tonight. And
it was
again,
a pleasure
we're going to get you back on. Oh, good thanks, Sister. And again,
okay.
we're going to get you back on the next time, and we'll go a little more in depth and, you know, keep reminding people why they need to support this petition drive.
Yes, please support this petition. Right now we have like 800 signatures, and the petition has been up for 3 weeks. To me, that's sad. That's very sad. We need thousands and thousands of signatures on here in order to even get them to look at us seriously. So please get the petitions out. Everyone can help repost. That's the name of the game. Even if you find it, just continue to repost. Get it out there.
Absolutely. And again,
okay.
we owe it to that young brother and to the Shabazz
yes.
family
to the
and
family.
Also to ourselves. That's
mm-hmm.
right. No doubt. So for those who may be saying, well, you know, why try to ask the government to do this or do that? That's not even the point. That's really
no, it's
not,
not
the
point,
point
at
know.
All because I don't know too many petitions that actually was rendered any action. But every petition that I know of definitely caused public awareness, and this is what we need. Sometimes public awareness is more important.
Absolutely. All right, my sister. Well, thank you again, and we'll continue to make sure that we get this information circulated and get people motivated to sign the petition.
All right. Thank you again. Have a great day.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Good night to you. Okay, family, again, we apologize for almost an hour of our program gone, so we are going to redo some of that very shortly. But what we want to do now is go to our brother, Dr. John Johnson, and, of course, we're going to talk about the rape and murder of Private First Class Lavina Johnson. We gave you some kind of insight in our program, with our program last week, and what we're going to do is hear the next phase of what we were talking about last week and also kind of bring it up to date somewhat. It seems like we're going to have to go into part three because we really are behind schedule tonight, and we want to make sure that Dr. Johnson is able to really give us as much information and you know, facts and so forth and so on. So we're going to, again, go for part three next week, but we are going to go to Dr. John Johnson in a few moments, and we're going to also allow you all to ask some questions, okay, because we do have, well, I'm looking at the time now. We have maybe about 40 minutes, and that should at least give us some of what we want to do for tonight. And so what we're going to do is bring in Dr. John Johnson. We do have, I guess, maybe one caller, two callers. I'm going to go to you just to be sure that you are in sync with the topic for tonight, and then we'll bring you back in. So, caller, you're at 8914. Did you have a question or a comment before we go to Dr. Johnson?
No, I'm just listening, and this is Rosa Khan with the Philadelphia Innocent Project. I'm just listening.
Oh, wonderful. All right, my brother, give thanks. All right. All right, that was Brother Rosa Khan from the Philadelphia Innocent Project, and you're going to be hearing more from him and about what he and others that are connected to, the work that they're doing. You're going to hear more about that in the upcoming weeks as well. Okay, we're going to take one more call, and then we're going to go to Dr. Johnson. Let's see. Actually, no, we're going to go right to Dr. Johnson because we do want to start getting this information. Dr. Johnson, I'm bringing you in right about now. Let's see. Okay, we should have you now. Dr. Johnson?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, very good, very good. You know, it is so interesting because I was talking to Dr. Johnson earlier, family, and he was telling me about the problems that he was having these past couple of days with his telephones and internet services. And then shortly after talking to you, Dr. Johnson, guess what?
Yeah, it happened to you. Well, at least yours was 1 hour. Mine have been 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
right.
And this isn't
family.
The first time. We've had problems.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And we just want to let our family listening audience know that, and we also remind them that with this technology, and especially when you're doing work that is relevant to exposing these people and also for striving to obtain justice, there's usually going to be some irregularities, and especially when it comes to technology, but also in when traveling and other things. So, you know, we try to keep our family abreast of reality, that if you're doing a certain kind of work, usually you can expect some kind of, you know, something, malfunction or something. But Dr. Johnson, thank you again for coming back this week, and hopefully you'll be able to come next week again because, again, we don't want to rush you. We want to give you ample time because, you know, we still have a lot of work to do in regards to this case and this situation. So let's continue where we were last week, and, of course, we kind of left off at, unfortunately, with your daughter's body being, you know, brought back to you here in the U.S. and your findings.
Okay. To start with, we were told to have a closed casket. The Army sent the casualty NCO, who actually came here to help us make funeral arrangements, ended up being a messenger boy. So he came to us, and he came to my wife and I, but he wanted to speak to me personally because I think after about 3 days, I think the Army pretty much knew that they weren't going to be dealing with my wife, that they were going to be dealing with me, and pretty much exclusively because my wife was so grieved over this situation. But at any rate, they asked me to have a closed casket. When I asked why, they said because this is the NCO telling me what the Army told him to tell me, that it was really bad. I told him, I said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to inspect Lavina's body, because I had launched a preliminary investigation into her death, and I already knew that the Army lied because they told me she was found dead in her barracks from an apparent suicide. They didn't tell me how she died. My preliminary investigation, I found out she was shot in the head, and she was found not in her barracks but in a contractor's tent, and it was in an area that was off limits to soldiers. So when I found out through my investigation that she was shot in the head, her body came to St. Louis on the 25th of July. Of course, this is in 2005. And I inspected it. I looked on the right side because she was right-handed. I didn't see anything. When I leaned over her body, I could see a skin graft on the top left side of the cranial, up over her left eye, and up over the frontal lobe. The irony about that is when I talked to the medical examiner who did the autopsy, and this was the 13th of August after I buried her, he specifically told me that Lavina stuck a M16 rifle in her mouth and shot herself. And then when I told him that I had seen the hole in her head and that it was on the left side, he argued with me that it was on the back of her head. I said, I told you I saw a bullet hole on the left side of my daughter's head. I didn't say where it was. I just said left side. He told me it depended on the angle you're looking at. So I knew then he was crazy. His name was Ed Reedy. He then told me that we couldn't find a bullet. He volunteered that. So I asked him, I said, did you do a rape kit? He said, no. I said, you people come to my house and you traumatize my family, claiming that my daughter took her own life, and you just didn't check to see if she had been raped. He said there was no sign of a struggle. So I said, well, that doesn't say much, because she could have been overpowered. She could have been drugged. I mean, there are a lot of things that could account for the fact that she was, not beaten. But I saw her body, and I'm going to tell you what I could physically see. I could see that her nose had been broken. I could see that her left eye at one time had been perforated, I think is the right term. I could see some lacerations that they tried to cover with makeup underneath her left eye, and her lip was split on both sides, really, and her and it looked like some kind of surgery had been performed on her bottom lip because it didn't look natural. So I knew, my brother Joseph, who has a degree in criminal science, he was the one who did the exploratory investigation. He told me that sounded like it was an entry wound, and the supposition at that time was it probably lodged in her tongue. Well, I didn't see any damage to her chin, just her bottom lip. So we had a little problem with that, but we assumed it was lodged in her tongue. They supposed to have taken 10 months to conduct what they considered was a proper investigation. After 10 months, I received a call from a special investigator. His name was Hughes. And this is how our conversation went. We've completed the investigation into your daughter's death. We have to take into consideration the Privacy Act. By the way, we concluded that your daughter committed suicide. And so I said, no, you didn't. He said, I beg your pardon? I said, no, you were very apprehensive about getting to the suicide part. I said, I'm going to tell you what I already know. I already know my daughter was murdered. What I'm not sure of was the rape part, but my supposition is that this was a rape and murder. He told me, what proof do you have? And I told him, well, I've got some proof, but we'll see. you know. I said, I'm going to give it to my attorney. This man on the phone said, I would have no problems reopening this investigation. I told him, no, you shouldn't have to, because if you had done your job in the first place, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So a month later, we get finally two packages. We get one from the criminal investigators out of Texas, and the other one came from Dover Air Force Base where the autopsy was done. Now, the pictures, we had 300 pictures. They were all black and white Xerox copies of pictures. Now, you claimed this was a suicide, but now you had an evidence in black and white pictures. I called my brother Joseph. He did an exploratory investigation. He has a degree in criminal science, so he pretty much knew what to look for. We talked over coffee, and he said, I'll let you know my findings tonight. He called me late that night, and he said, John, you're not going to like this. And I said, what? He said, they beat the hell out of Lavina, man. I said, how do you know? He said, I'm looking at it on these pictures. He said, they sent black and white pictures, John. He said, but I can still see stuff that's wrong. He said, first of all, Lavina got a broke nose. He said, and she got a broke neck. I said, well, how do you know that? He said, because her shoulder, her right shoulder is dislocated and it's up and it's elevated. Her head is leaning to the elevator side and not to the side that should have dropped down, and they never put her head on the autopsy block in all of these pictures. He said, so she's got a dislocated elbow, dislocated shoulder. He said, but John, there's one picture, man, I want you to see. He said, you got to look at these pictures. He said, because you're going to have to be the spokesperson for your daughter. So I came over that night. He laid down a picture in front of me and got up from the table. And he said, tell me what you think that is. So I'm looking at this picture, and then I realized that it was my daughter's vaginal area. Mm-hmm. So he said, look at that. Tell me what you see. I said, well, the labia on the right side is swollen, and there are tears at the top. The left side is collapsed, and there are tears at the top. I said, that looks to me like forcible rape. He said, but that's not all. He said, look in her vaginal vault. So I looked in her vaginal vault, and it looked like it was a substance in it, and Joseph said it's some kind of coagulant. And it's sitting in there and had her vaginal area wedged open. So he said, you know what? He said, that's probably, and because she was found dead in a contractor's tent, we assumed at that time that it was lime that they had poured in her to destroy DNA evidence. So we kept with that supposition, and then the political arena here in Missouri got involved. I wrote Congressman Lacey Clay. I wrote Senator Claire McCaskill, and we put a preliminary package together, and of course we included the black and white pictures, and we sent it to both of them. They both insisted that I have an independent autopsy done. I didn't think I needed an independent autopsy. What I wanted was someone in the Army sent me a picture of a CD-ROM. I wrote and asked for a CD-ROM because we knew that was in color. I was told I wasn't entitled to it. I wrote back the second time, and I said, according to the Privacy Act, my daughter's dead. I'm the only one that's entitled to the information. I want this CD. They wrote me back, and they said, we have to consider the people that were involved in this because we have to protect their rights under the Freedom of Information Act. I said, no, because if they are involved in a homicide, I'm entitled to their names according to the Freedom of Information Act. So they told me to get in contact with my they were going to get in contact with their legal department. I filled out a Freedom of Information Act, and I took it to Lacey Clay's office. Lacey Clay happened to be on the Jessica Lynch Pat Tillman hearing. When his turn came, General Johnson was sitting there, Lacey Clay made this statement. I'm sitting right here watching him when he said it. He said, there seems to be these murders, rapes, and cover-ups in the military. That may not be what he said verbatim, but that's paraphrased pretty good. He said one of them was a constituent of mine. Her name was Lavina Johnson. Johnson sat there and said, I'm not familiar with that name. When they got off camera, no, Lacey Clay then asked him if we could get a copy of this CD-ROM. He held the picture up, and the general said he would see that the family would get that information. When he was off the camera, he went to Lacey Clay, and he said, I had everything I was entitled to. Lacey Clay, I understand, went to Henry Waxman, who was the chairperson over that committee, and he complained that General Johnson had lied because he apparently knew who Lavina was, because he told him that Lavina, that I wasn't entitled to the colored CD. Henry Waxman ordered the Army to send Congress a copy of that CD, and he gave them 30 days. Of course, they took 45. They got the CD before we did. Lacey Clay ended up calling my family, telling me he was coming to St. Louis and he was going to bring the CD with him. I didn't want to go hear anything he had to say, so my brother Joseph and my brother Jeffrey went. They got the colored CD. Joseph took it home, and then he started reviewing it. He called me up. He said, John, man. He said, I see why they didn't want you to have these colored pictures, man. I said, why is that? He said, John, there's blood all over the damn place. He said, there are gravelly blood drops, which says they moved the body from a primary crime scene. And remember this one with Lavina lying there with her right arm covering her face? I said, yeah. He said, this was staged, John. He said they didn't want to find her at that primary crime scene because that would have told them who the culprit was. He said, but John, man, he said the crime scene where she's lying, he said, I'm looking at it. He said, didn't you tell me that the bullet hole was on the left side of Lavina's head? I said, correct. He said, I got a picture of it. He said, John, the hole in her head is so small, you could stick a pencil down it. He said, so it was a small caliber weapon. She was shot in the head. And I said, okay. He said, not only that, John, he said, they pulled the scalp back. He said, I don't know if they tried to make the wound look bigger or what. He said, but this vaginal stuff in this vaginal area, he said, John, man, he said, Lavina's body is burned. And I said, her body's burned. He said, yeah, there's a burn running down the right side of her body. He said, but you know what? He said, her pants aren't burned in the back. So I said, so she was disrobed. He said, yeah. He said, this was a rape, John. He said, this was a rape and a murder, and the Army is covering for somebody. So then I told him, I said, well, here, what we need to do, we're going to do this in segments. Let's concentrate on what we think is the most important thing. He said, what do you mean? I said, the anomaly. What is the one thing that sticks out? He said, well, John, there's so much. He said, you're going to have to make that call. I said, okay. The Army says she stuck an M16 rifle in her mouth and shot herself. I said, I got a statement that I'm holding in my hand right now, and this is what this statement says. So I said, listen to me. It says, the wound to Private Johnson's head is consistent when a barrel of a weapon is stuck in the mouth and the round exit the back of the head. He said, well, that's a lie because there is no hole in the back of Lavina's head. I'm looking at this bullet hole on the top left side of Lavina's head, John, and it's an entry wound. He said, I'm going to tell you how I know it's an entry wound. He said, because any bullet that enters the body moves one way or the other, and it could turn, and when it exits with a bigger hole than the entry wound. And I said, well, it's worse than that, because if she stuck an M16 rifle in her mouth like the Army said, there would have been a huge blowout in the back of the head. Probably her brain would have been desecrated. and the buoyancy of her face wouldn't have been able to stand that hot gas, so she would have had burns on her face. He said, she don't have none of that, John. He said, she was shot with a handgun. He said, and so this was a rape and a murder, John. He said, so what are we going to do? So I, again, went back to Lacey Clay and Claire McCaskill, and I said, we've got this information, and Lavina was raped and murdered. Claire McCaskill acted like she was, I didn't never talk to her personally, but her staff seemed really upset about me saying Lavina was murdered. Every time the cameras showed both her and Lacey Clay, we got to find out what happened to this young lady. That's the way they put it.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured out, okay, the system's not going to help us, so we got to investigate our own case. So I put together a homicide team. Four of the five of us are family members. My brother David has almost 30 years of law enforcement. Half of that time he was a homicide detective. He's an interrogation expert. But also he's a Vietnam veteran. In fact, he's a Purple Heart recipient. He used the M16 mm-hmm. rifle in combat.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew for a fact that when he saw the picture that it wasn't a wound from an M16 rifle. In fact, he was the first person to make a supposition that was a 9mm. Okay? Now, my brother, his wife is also a police officer. So between the two of them, we got over 30 years. I mentioned Joseph, who has a degree in criminal science. And then I have a young lady that's not a family member. She has a degree in journalism, and she's a research expert. So during our debriefings, two subjects came up. One of them was the gunshot wound, and the other one was the substance that was in Lavina's vaginal vault. She did research on both of them. We had another debriefing, and she said, I got the answers to both our questions. She said, number one, you're right. Lavina was shot with a 9mm handgun, and this is how she knew. She had some research that she had done where a person had been shot in the exact same spot, but that person lived, but they lost their left eye. We compare the shape of the brain of Lavina's wound with the wound of that gentleman and also the damage that was done to the skull. The difference was on the top left side of Lavina's skull, we didn't see this on the pictures, but we ended up finding out later that her skull was cracked in. And I'll tell you how we figured out that if we get to part three or whatever. So anyway, we know now that she shot with a 9mm. Donna mm-hmm. also, her name's Donna Head, she also realized that officers in the military carry 9mm handguns. So I am the psychological profiler for our team. So I profiled what the culprit probably was. And I said 45 to 50, white male, high rank, apparently with a lot of prestige, well-respected within the military, probably Catholic, maybe even Irish Catholic, I'm not sure. But I knew they were Catholic because there was a Bible that was found at the crime scene that was partly charred. They connected that with the crime by saying Lavina was in the tent setting fires. But they made a big mistake. They asked her friends if she carried a Bible, and they said, yes, a small one, which is accurate. This was a full-scale St. James version, and it had a crucifix wrapped up in it. So, and whoever set the fire also tried to burn up that crucifix, so it probably had Lavina's blood on it. So we got past that part. Now we're back to the vaginal area. We did research, and we figured out that what this substance was in Lavina's vaginal area was, they call it a chemical compound. It is the kind of chemical compound when soldiers get wounded, it's a powdery substance. They pour it in the wound and it coagulates to keep that person from bleeding to death. The only way that you can get that out is by surgery. That's what we found. Now, let me go back. Now I got Lacey Clay and Claire McCaskill saying I have to have an independent autopsy because all of this that I'm saying, even though I got pictures and everything, is hearsay information. See this, and this is how they play this game. So we scheduled an independent autopsy. The person that we hired wanted $400 a month. His name is Michael Graham. He is the coroner of the city of St. Louis. He wanted $400 an hour. Mary Case is the coroner for the county. She was supposed to have done an independent autopsy. Now, let me tell you why it was set up like that. 60 Minutes was interested in our story at that time. So they came down here and filmed the autopsy, and they were going to pay Mary Case for doing an autopsy. I was going to pay Michael Graham for doing the preliminary autopsy. Instead of doing it like we wanted them to do it because we wanted to eliminate any confusion about the autopsies, they did it together. So, and they did the one thing that we didn't want. I had a friend of ours who was a police officer who came, and he didn't want us to go to the autopsy. He felt the family had gone through enough, so he went to the autopsy. He called me after the autopsy, and he said, I think you're going to be pleased. So I said, okay. So he met with me, and I asked, and he had some woman with him. She was about 6 feet tall, had a purse around her shoulders, looked like an FBI agent or CIA or somebody. I don't know who she was. And he acted like he didn't want to talk. So I said, well, what can you tell me about my daughter? He said, well, her body was on, she had been burnt. She was burned on her right side. I said, okay, anything else? He said, and they didn't have to do everything they did to her. So I said, what do you mean? Who are you talking about? He said, "He said you're going to get an autopsy. I can't say anything else." So I asked him, I said, well, then why did you volunteer to go and watch the autopsy if you wasn't going to come back and tell us what you saw? He said, I just can't get involved right now. So apparently somebody done got to him, told him to keep his mouth shut. The day they did the autopsy, Michael Graham called me, and this is the way our conversation went. Now, understand something. I hired him because he was supposed to have been a gun wound expert. This is how our conversation went. My results are inconclusive. I said, what's inconclusive? He said, about how your daughter died. I said, so well, she was shot, wasn't she? He said, yeah, but what you can do to yourself, somebody else can do to you. So I said, what are you talking about? I said, are you saying she was shot with an M16 rifle? He said, I'm not familiar enough with an M16 rifle to make that determination. I said, you know the difference between an M16 rifle gunshot wound and a handgun, don't you? He said, but I'm not familiar with the M16 rifle to make a determination. I said, okay, was her shoulder dislocated? He said, no, it wasn't. I said, it wasn't? He said, no, and I shook it just to make sure. I said, what about her vaginal area? He said her vaginal area was red, but that's all I saw. So I said, wait a minute. I said, you are a coroner, and you just did supposedly an independent autopsy, and you can't tell me anything? He said, I've given you everything I found. I said, okay, I'll just wait for your autopsy then. So we got off the phone. I was really disappointed, but I'm going to tell you a mistake that we made that I didn't mention. Right before he did the autopsy, the preliminary package that we had put together, we had sent a copy of it back to the Army. When we sent it back to the Army, they didn't even respond to our evidence. The only thing they talked about was the CD-ROM. We gave the preliminary package to Lacey Clay's office and also to Claire McCaskill's office. This is the same preliminary package that we gave him. The day before he was supposed to perform the autopsy, he called me up and he said, the person who signed off in the autopsy in the military was a good friend of his. So I said, what does that have to do with you performing an autopsy as an independent contractor to me? He said, I'm going to do about it, but I'm just letting you know we're a small group and we're all friends. So he letting me know I wasn't going to get any justice in this autopsy. It didn't matter who I got. So he came back and he said it was inconclusive. Now, once he said it was inconclusive, I took that package to Claire McCaskill's office and I asked her to see if she could schedule a congressional hearing because they had given the Tillman family one. Her staff called me up and they said, blunt, we are not going to request a congressional hearing for your daughter's death. And I said, so you know she's murdered and you're not going to have requested congressional hearing. And they said, no. I went to Clay's office. I said, okay, I need a congressional hearing, man. I can take the evidence up there. I don't need anybody to prove what happened to Lavina. I already got what I need. I need justice, man, somebody who's going to do the right thing. So Clay's legal advisor sat there and told me this. He said, I believe your daughter was murdered. He said, but the congressman have to look out for his image. Look out for his image. I said, my daughter voted for him. My daughter voted for Claire McCaskill in the preliminaries. And you mean to tell me she voted them in office and she can't get them to represent her? Why in the hell are we putting you people in office? I said, now look, and now I'm mad. You have to understand that. I said, I'm going to tell you something. If the Army runs this country, just go on and tell us that. But don't stand up here and try to pretend you have an empathy and you have a sympathy, but you can't do anything when you're the one that's paying them. You know, Congress is okaying their salary. You have the authority to go to them and say, straighten this out. But everybody looked like they acted as though they were afraid. Remember I told you 60 Minutes was preparing to do a story, right? Remember that?
Yes, yes.
The man who came down here, Burt Ruttman, he had just been promoted to do 60 Minutes. He flew down here, met with me, my wife, and Donna Head, who's our media consultant. He asked for a copy of her roster, Lavina's roster. The next day, I faxed that to him. Less than 2 hours after I faxed it to him, he called me up, and this is what he told me. He said, I talked to 17 people who said they thought your daughter was murdered. Now, he said, I found out what happened to your daughter. She was murdered. 17 people on that roster said they thought she was murdered. Now, the irony is that the Army wrote up a suicide scenario in their paperwork. But when you compare the paperwork with the colored pictures, they don't match. They use witness statements to try to establish a motive for a suicide. They never really confirmed a suicide. They acted as if they didn't need the responsibility or didn't have the burden of proof to prove that it was a suicide, because they said it, we supposed to accept it at face value. He said, I talked to 17 people. They said they thought your daughter was murdered. 3 of them said they already talked to you. Well, I know who those 3 people were, and I'm going to tell you how they fit in what happened here. He said the one young man said he and Lavina were friends when she was at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I knew who that man, the young man, was because Lavina told us about him when she talked to us on the phone. And she said they were friends and they went to church together, which is the same thing that he said. We went to church together. He said, and when we started talking about sex, which means he hit on her for some, she told him she wanted to wait until she got married, but I respected that. He said, but now he didn't go to Iraq. He stayed at Fort Campbell. Lavina got sent to Iraq. He said Lavina started seeing somebody, and they date raped her. So the reporter said, he asked him, so she was raped, and he said, yes. He said, how does she die? Do you know that? He said, yeah. The perpetrator said he wasn't trying to kill her. He said, so wait a minute, hold it. So she was murdered. And the young man said, yes. He said, why did they come to the family and say she committed suicide? He said they admonished him for what he did, but they're covering for him. Now, when he said that, I went back to my profile, and I gave it to Donna. And I said, go on. I said, I'm going to tell you what he meant. Whoever this crazy maniac was, they done court-martialed his butt. I said, find out anybody who was in Iraq with high rank that was court-martialed, probably for sexual misconduct or some crap like that. I'd be doggone. Donna goes right to the website. She finds this joker, and they court-martialed him for sexual misconduct but not rape and murder. So when people tried to put the dots together and say, wait a minute, is this guy, he was in Iraq, was he involved in Lavina's death? The Army countered by saying it had nothing to do with another soldier. He was having an affair on his wife, and he got caught at it, and that's a court-martial offense. So they covered for him in that regard. Now, here's the irony behind this whole thing. A month later, our media consultant was keeping in contact with this guy because he was getting ready to prime us for 60 Minutes. In fact, they flew down here. They took a picture of me getting my exhuming my daughter's body. They actually took pictures of the autopsy that was done. But the autopsy were sequestered, both of them. The Channel 4 here, was they filmed it, and then CBS filmed it, but it got sequestered for whatever reason. And so I couldn't even at one point even get an autopsy out of the guy who did it, the autopsy. So I threatened him, you know, and I told him, look, you know this was a murder. If you don't give me an autopsy and pictures and x-rays, because I know he took all of them because he's on TV taking pictures, and I know he took x-rays because I ended up with a copy of them. He sent me a letter. No, actually, I sent him a letter, and I threatened him. You know, I told him, I don't know who you think you're messing with, because I'm not going to let them get away with murdering my daughter, and you better be careful, because if you don't do your job, I'm coming after you too. I didn't bite my tongue about it. So he sent me an autopsy, what he did, he dropped breadcrumbs in it. See if this sounds familiar. He said part of her tongue was surgically removed. Remember, our supposition was that the bullet lodged in her tongue. Okay? So they done went in her chin and cut out her tongue to get that bullet out. Okay? The substance that, now he told me the only thing he saw was that her vaginal area was red. But he put in his autopsy part of her vaginal area and part of her anal had been surgically removed, and he said at the other center. Now, I'm going to tell you why he put at the other center, because he knew in those color, the black and white pictures that we sent him, when he looked at those pictures, he realized that there was a foreign substance that was in Lavina's vaginal area. And he knew that that picture had been taken at the autopsy center. So by the time he got the body, that substance was not in there. So they had gone in there and had done surgery and cut it out. Okay. He said her bases, bones at the base of her skull. She had fractures at the base of her skull. So she had a broken neck. So we our supposition was during this fight, she was probably strangled. Then we got my brother David and his wife Sherry joined our team because I wanted, I brought people in increments because I always wanted fresh eyes coming in. Sherry called me one day and she said, "John, you won't believe what I just found." So I came over to her house. She laid two pictures down in front of me. She said, "Tell me the difference of those two pictures." So I'm looking at them. But you have to understand, now I done looked at these pictures for almost 3 years. So I couldn't see any difference in them. I said, "You're going to have to tell me." She said, "Look at the lettering on the shirt." So I looked at the lettering on the shirt. Now let me explain why this was important. Lavina was dressed in a PT shirt. She had on PT pants. PT is physical training. She had on jogging shoes. And she had an infrared reflecting belt around her waist so she wouldn't get hit by a car or something at night. She was on her way to go jogging. The people that were waiting for her said they were waiting for her to go jogging, but she never showed up. And that was unlike her because she ran almost every day. Mm-hmm. So now, back to the T-shirts. I'm looking at one. The word Army on it is black. And it's small, and there are blood smudges all over that shirt. So I'm looking at it. Then I looked at the other picture. The word Army was white lettering, and it was bigger letterings. And when you look to see if the smudges of blood that was on the black shirt was on the white one, you didn't see it. So you got criminal investigators changing T-shirts at a crime scene. That was one of the reasons why they sent the black and white pictures, because they didn't want us to pick that up, but we did anyway. Okay? There was a pool of blood. Now, when I met on the 19th of July in 2009, I met with the Army up in Lacey Clay's office. Colonel Ann Wright, who has been fighting abusive of women in the military for years. In fact, she retired because she said the war in Iraq was illegal. And she was with us. Well, the Army wouldn't let her come in Clay's office with us. So I go to Clay and I said, "People can tell you who to let in your office." And so he goes to them and he talks. So they come back and they said they didn't want anybody in there that could misunderstand what they're saying. I said, "We all speak English, so I don't understand what that means." I said, "Now, listen, they're going to lie." And so he said, "Well, they said they're not going to debrief the family." So I told Ann Wright, I said, "Look, no problem." So I put a tape recorder in my pocket, and I went in there anyway. They sat in front of me, the criminal investigator did, and he inferred that my daughter was a whore. He said she had a boyfriend at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. She had a boyfriend in Iraq. She was having sex. She came down with a sexually transmitted disease, got depressed over it, and killed herself. He said, according to the evidence that we collected in our investigation, there was a witness who heard a shot. And when he came to investigate, he saw her lying there with a pool of blood around her head. And according to section, whatever that is, that's considered a suicide. I said, "Wait, hold up." I said, "Wait a minute. You conducted an investigation, and the only forensics evidence that you could come up with was that a witness said that they heard a shot." And he said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Now, you said there was a pool of blood around her head, did you not?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Now, here's a picture of Lavina's head. See that bullet hole? It's on the left side of her head. Do you see that?" He said, "Yes, sir." So I laid that picture down. I handed them a sketch. It was called a crime scene sketch that the criminal investigators drew, and the dummies drew two pools of blood on that picture, one around her head and one on the right side of her body. Now, the bullet hole was on the left side. So I asked him, I said, you say you found a pool of blood around her head. Is that correct? He said, yes, sir. I handed him his sketch. I said, what is that? He looked at it. He said, it's one of our sketches. I said, how many pools of blood's drawn on it? He said, it looks like two. No, you know what's on that sketch because you are a criminal investigator. How many pools of blood are there on that sketch? He said, two, sir. He said, but I can explain the second one. I said, which one are you considering the second one? He said, the one on the right-hand side by her shoulder. I said, explain it to me. He said, when the witnesses came in and picked up the bench, it was lying in the blood. So when they picked it up, it formed that pool of blood as they were taking it out of the tent. I said, wait a minute. I said, so you're saying that the bench had enough blood on it that when they lifted it, it could form a gravity pool of blood. Is that what you just said? He said, yes, sir. Then how come there weren't gravity drops of blood leading from that pool of blood to the outside? He said, I can't explain that. I said, because you just told a lie. I said, I'm going to tell you another reason why I know you lied. I pulled out a statement and I handed it to him. I said, read what that witness said. So he read it to himself, and then he handed it back to me. The statement said, they asked the witness, where was the rifle when you came in the tent? The witness said, I didn't see a rifle, and I looked around the body. He said, what else did you see? He said, there was a bench turned upside down on top of the body, and there was a lit accelerant sitting on the bottom of the bench. We lifted up the bench, and the accelerant fell on the ground, and we took the bench outside and put the fire out. Then we came back and put the fire out in the tent. So they set the tent on fire. So what they were trying to do, here's what we think. We think they was trying to destroy or distort Lavina's body or disfigure Lavina's body so badly that they couldn't readily identify her. Joseph said he think this lit accelerant was an aerosol can of hairspray. Joseph said they were spraying that spray and they were using a cigarette lighter at the same time. But he thinks that can got too hot, so they dropped it. So they didn't get the finish to burn her up like that, so they dressed her and decided to dump her in a contractor's tent and burn her up. Did you want me to stop here so we can answer some questions? Or?
Yes. Okay. Actually, we're going to have to stop all together because we really run out of time. What I'd like to do, if possible, Dr. Johnson, are you available tomorrow evening around 9 o'clock your time?
9 o'clock my time in the morning or night?
No, in the evening.
9 o'clock at night my time, yes.
Okay, let's do this because I really want us to be able to move forward, and I know that our listeners are kind of like, you know, sitting there very tentatively, and what I'd like to do is do a special edition tomorrow.
Okay.
It'll be 10 o'clock our time, family, Eastern Standard Time, 9 o'clock Central Time. What we'll do tomorrow, and we'll let folks definitely ask questions, okay?
Okay.
We'll start off with that, and we'll continue it going.
Okay.
Does that work for you?
Absolutely.
Very good.
Okay,
family, we apologize again for, you know, what happened tonight. It was just something we could not avoid. You know what's going on with this. As you can hear, there's a lot that's being said. So we're going to be ready tomorrow for the backup system just in case we have another problem. Hopefully we will not. But Dr. Johnson, thank you again. And we're going to bring you back tomorrow. Again, it's 9 o'clock your time, Dr. Johnson. And for us on the East Coast, we're talking about 10 o'clock. And, of course, if you're on the West Coast, then you're even 3 hours earlier than that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Family, again, we're going to close this segment out because we don't want to rush through. We only had like 5 or 10 minutes left. We don't want to rush through any of this. It's that important where we allow everyone to be able to ask questions, get answers, get responses appropriately. So thank you, and please bear with us. And we certainly appreciate all of you tuning in. Our boards are lit up, Dr. Johnson, just so you'll know. Our boards are lit up. Please tune in tomorrow night again, 9 o'clock Central Time, for Eastern Time, 10 o'clock, and we will continue this dialogue for at least an hour, maybe a little longer. We're going to see how we can work that out, but definitely at least an hour. So, family, please come back with us tomorrow night. Dr. Johnson, thank you again, and we continue on for justice.
Okay, and thank you.
Family, again, we're going to leave all of you tonight as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. And, of course, we're talking about justice and peace, but there can be no real Hotep, no real peace, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. As we definitely know, and it's often said, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. So tomorrow, we leave you with power, prosperity, as we strive for peace. Hussein Adam.